You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Hello, Force fanatics, and welcome to episode 190 of Making Tracks, brought to you by those fine folk over at Fanthatrax. My name's Mark, I am one of the co-hosts, and of course, you won't get any awards for guessing who's with me today, because he's with me just about every episode. That's right, it's Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, mate. How are you?
Very well, thanks. How's your week in Star Wars been?
Been a busy one. Last weekend we had Echo Live up in Redditch, or for me, down in Redditch. It was chock-a-block, busy, loads of folks were there. Gus Lopez was over from the States. Gus, who does the collecting track at Celebration, and any collector knows who Gus Lopez is. People from Vintage Rebellion were there, and Generation Skywalker, and all sorts of different places. It was brilliant. It was so big this time. They actually had an overspill room next to where they normally have.
Fantastic.
It's a massive room they've got anyway, but they had the room next to it. So Dave Tree was in there with all the cool stuff and lots of other folks. Chris, who put on the event over in Finster that we went to a couple of months ago, he came over from the States, so he was there. And everywhere you look, there was somebody that you knew. Plenty of money changing hands. Lots of pats on the back for the Echo guys. Completely deservedly. Really good weekend. How about you?
Well, yeah, I didn't go to Echo, unfortunately. I just headed down to London Film Fair on the Sunday to pick up a few little 007 autographs and have a nose around. Jack Claff was there from Star Wars. A few other people. If you're into your like cinema and movie memorabilia, so especially if you're like heavily into like programs and stuff like that, there's always that stuff. And I mean, there was vintage original Star Wars posters going for like $12.50. Pricey stuff. So it didn't come home with me, but but nice stuff, and nice to kind of see it in the flesh and not just picture on a website and stuff. So that was cool. Been doing lots of stuff with the Rebel Legion, out gearing up for the Galactic Gathering, which is happening on May the 4th at the National Space Center. I believe there's going to be lots of folk there for that. Us, Sabre Guild, Dark Empire, Mando Mercs, UK Garrison, Fanthatrax.
Fanthatrax are there. Yes, Fanthatrax definitely there. We're there all day Saturday, and we have representatives there on Sunday, including your good self. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. There's some other cool stuff that's happening, Fanthatrax related, at that event. And yeah, anytime you get to go to the Space Center is neat. And I love the name Galactic Gathering as well. That's very cool. Very much looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So, okay, back to Echo. What did you buy? Because I can't believe, if it sounds like it was such a good event, that you walked away empty-handed this time.
I bought lots of little bits. You know me, fiddly farty bits. So I got lots of little bits and bobs. One of which I thought was rather cool was one of the guests, I haven't mentioned the guest. It was Echo Live, and it was basically the Battle of Hoth was the theme.
Nice.
So lots of guests from the Hoth sequences, Rebels and Imperials, and the main guest was Dennis Lawson. So I hadn't got a Dennis Lawson autograph. I'd interviewed him a few years ago for Making Tracks, which was great. Met him, shook his hand, did the sting for us and all that stuff, but never got his autograph. Because I'm not a big autograph guy, but I thought, right, well, I wanted that. It's Dennis Lawson, it's Wedge, it's a big deal.
Right,
so I didn't know what to get signed, and I hadn't thought, it's always lastminute.com with me, it always is. So I thought, I need a Wedge figure. So I went trawling around thinking, I'm never going to find a Wedge figure. That's not how life works. But I found a Wedge figure, so maybe it is how life works, and pulled it £15 for a 2005 Wedge figure. Really great condition. I was very, very pleased with it. Went to the queue. And basically, yeah, got Dennis Lawson to sign my brand new, although he didn't know it was brand new, could have been 20 years in my collection for all he knew, but 20, you know, like 20 minutes rather than 20 years, brand new Wedge Antilles figure. So I was very, very pleased with that. And yeah, got some other bits. I got some really nice books. Got one of the prints from Bowman's Green, which was a Bosk picture with some stickers that came with it. Always love Bowman's Green stuff. So that was very cool to get. Picked up a couple of other bits from that stand as well. Paul Naylor and Jonathan Hipkiss from Fantha were also there selling some stuff on the stand. Bought some bits from Paul, Celebration 2022 Anaheim little bag. Celebration, obviously, we know Celebration for swag. Actually, loads of swag, like specifically made for Echo. We're going to have to do some Fantha swag for the next Echo in October, because it's too good an opportunity not to do it. So lots of swaggy bits. Yeah, so lots of little, it's always little bits with me, little odds and sods. So they were the main things that I got at Echo. I didn't get anything big. Let's put it that way. It was all fairly small stuff, no big ticket things, because even though I've got a big collection room, I'm fairly limited for space, but I was well pleased with what I did get.
Awesome. Sounds like a nice little haul. I picked up the Phantom Menace Star Wars Retro box. So that's now proudly sat in the room. I say proudly sat, it's just dumped in the corner, like most stuff these days. And this.
Oh.
You see what it is? This is great podcasting, everybody.
This is brilliant podcasting.
So I'll give you a clue. It's metal.
Yes.
So basically, just a complete random auction that I happened to stumble across.
Yeah.
It's basically a part from a pod racer from Phantom Menace.
An actual part from an actual pod racer?
Actual part, yeah. It's quite cool, actually. It comes with all the documentation. So you've got, like, tracks, like the actual invoices and stuff. Yeah. So it's basically a guy who was a props provider. And you can see here that basically in 1997, on the 17th of January, they ordered 4 pallets of aeroplane parts, an aero wing, 4 aero turrets, sections of scrap, 10 seats, and 4 boxes of containers. So that's just the general gubbins that I guess they used for God knows what back then. And this was a part of one of the pod races. Haven't quite figured out what part it is. Yeah, it wasn't like a huge amount of money, but I was just like, you know what? That's quite fun. And I was going to, I might actually end up sticking it onto one of the Rebel Legion sets, actually, if I can find a way of attaching it cleanly.
So
got that, a nice little curio bit to just stick away in the collection somewhere with all my other found parts and what have you. Right. Let's talk some news, shall we?
So, George Lucas, I can't believe he hasn't already got a Palme d'Or, but he is receiving an honorary Palme d'Or at Cannes 2024. It's not just happening in May, I've got to say. It's happening on the 25th of May, which is Star Wars Day, isn't it? So that's kind of perfect. Yeah. Mm. How has Lucas not got one of these already for the career that he's had, not just on the screen, not just for the cultural impact, but for everything else he's done from a technical point of view? Can you believe that he hasn't already got one of these? Because Harrison Ford got his last year, I believe.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I guess the thing is, you know what it's like? It's like, you don't want to give like somebody like a lifetime achievement if they still could be active or 20 or 30 years left on the clock. And that's not to say that Lucas hasn't got 20 or 30 years left on the clock, and let's hope he has. But, you know, since he sold Lucasfilm to Disney, as far as we're aware, because he might be making these little documentary art house stuff in his garage, like he's promised. But as far as I'm aware, he's not active in the creative industry anymore as such, at least making movies, building a $1 billion museum. So that's probably taken up a fair amount of his time.
That's a very good point. I just wonder sometimes how, you know, when they get to a certain level, a certain stratosphere, and Lucas topped the Forbes list once again with his well-earned fortune and smartly accrued fortune, because of course when he sold Lucasfilm, a lot of that payoff, if you want to call it that, came in the form of Disney shares. I don't think he's going to be sitting on a street corner waving his cap around anytime soon, is he?
Nah, I don't think so, because if nothing else, he could just rock up to Echo Live and sell like a few hundred autographs and make a fair bob or two. So there would be plenty of options if he wanted to. I'd love to spend a day with old George, like a day in the life of, like, you know, the retired George Lucas. What does he do? And does he miss it? You do wonder, don't you?
Yeah, that's just a really good point, actually, because he's a guy of a certain age. He's 80 this year, I think. So, you know, he gets to a certain age and your priorities change and he's happily married and they've adopted. So it's probably a busy household and he's out of the movie industry generally. But he did say he was going to be doing his little, I'm waggling the air quotes, that's good for podcasting, his little art house films and stuff. And it would surprise me not one jot if all of a sudden something dropped on Disney Plus or wherever.
Could you imagine? Art Nouveau type, weird, postmodern meta.
You don't know what the hell you're saying, mate.
No, I don't. I'm just making it up. But, like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, go back to the short films that he was making prior to THX 1138 at college and stuff. They were all very weird and odd and
out there.
Yeah, totally, man. We're way out there. So, like, congratulations to Mr. Lucas. I worked on a documentary that was up for a Palme d'Or at some point. Didn't get it. So he's beating me anyway. Fair play to him.
Hi, this is Neil Scanlan, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
The day that The Acolyte arrives on Disney Plus, 4th of June in the States, 5th of June here in the UK, is rapidly approaching. And speaking with Empire Magazine, who've really covered the heck out of The Acolyte, Yunus Suetono was discussing his role in the show as not Chewbacca, but another Wookiee called Kelnaka, who's a Jedi Wookiee. It looks like he's thrilled to bits because, as he says in the piece, Ever since I was 5 years old, I've been fantasizing about being a Jedi like every other kid. When the word Jedi was first mentioned, I felt really excited, like a little kid who finally gets his favorite toy on his birthday. And so basically he is this Wookiee Jedi, and he goes on to talk about how he created Chewie and learned the mannerisms from the late Peter Mayhew. But now this Wookiee is very much his own character. So we've got the Acolyte coming. There's certainly a lot of creatures and species that we're familiar with, of course, Wookiees being one of them. What do you think of this? We've had Wookiee Jedi in the comics. We've had Wookiee Jedi in the Clone Wars. Characters have interacted with these Wookiee characters. But do you think the broader, the wider Star Wars viewing world that isn't as sort of into it as maybe we are ready for a Wookiee that's generally pulling people's arms off to be what should be a mellow, passive Jedi character?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised they haven't done it before. Maybe they haven't really had the option really to do it in live action before. But I think it's well and truly overdue. Just looking at Carol Nacker as a character, there's always that risk, isn't there, of everybody just comparing a Wookiee to Chewbacca. And so therefore, you've got to make him look distinctly different. And I think they've done that. At least in the photo, he looks slightly wise and slightly cunning a little bit. Going to look for a really different performance as a character than what we should probably see from Chewie. But at the same time, Wookiees are kind of fun, aren't they? You get a lot of comic kind of mileage with Wookiees, I think, of any era. So it would be interesting to see where they place him. Is he going to come with some kind of translator? Is he going to speak basic or something? You know what I mean? How does he communicate to us? Is he going to have a Padawan or companion to do that role that Han did so well?
We're so used to Chewie. We saw it in Solo when you realise Chewie, when he's in the pit with Solo, and Han can speak a bit of Wookiee. And in the old EU past of Han Solo, he was kind of raised by that older female Wookiee, wasn't he? So he learned to speak a bit of the language. So you can kind of parlay that into his past in the canon era if you want. But generally, people don't know what Chewie's saying. You need a 3PO around or a Solo around who can translate. So that's definitely going to be interesting. But I think with certain species and certain races, the Clone Wars did it in that they did attribute certain accents to characters. So the Weequay spoke like really badly accented Cockneys. Twi'leks would generally speak with that French accent and those kind of races. And they'd sort of give them a certain earth flavor because it's a shorthand, isn't it? But then you see a Rodian as a bad guy in A New Hope, sitting opposite Han Solo, never getting a shot off because only Han shot, of course, as we all know. And then you see more heroic, more good versions of a Rodian. And it kind of muddies the waters, but it just shows you that just like humans, some are good and some are bad. And maybe here with this Wookiee, he's not a smuggler. He's not a brawler like Cassanton. He's a Jedi. He just happens to be a Wookiee.
You assume anyway that in this day and age, as it were, in that kind of end of the High Republic, he would have been brought up as a Padawan, so he would have been discovered through the traditional means and not somebody who's joined the Order late or anything like that. So it kind of comes down to that whole nature versus nurture argument. And so how much of, you know, the Wookiee's temperament is just their very nature and how much of it can be learned or, in this case, unlearned. But Star Wars has run the risk of, especially in the, I think, the expanded universe, pretty bad at typecasting species, especially Rodians. They were generally crap, pretty devious in terms of they would double cross you. They're only really there to make a deal and they sell you as quick as they can. Yeah, I've kind of noticed that the whole dialect, regional dialect kind of thing seems to be something which seems to be more evident in the animation. And I don't know if it's a societal change as well, because you could start to argue again that typecasting alien species by their regional dialect and actually how much of that is some kind of commentary about the country or something that the people are coming from. Like, you know, if we want to get really deep into the weeds of it. So you don't see it quite so much. Like, I don't think the Twi'leks have had like French accents in the way that they did. All the Twi'leks you met in the Old Republic MMO were French. Yeah. And, you know, when we did see most of them in animation, they would have, especially Clone Wars. And then Hera was, I think, the big one who didn't. But then when she speaks to her father and that in those episodes, she's speaking their language. And Vanessa did that by having that French inflection and stuff. So, which was quite a clever way of doing it. One, really being excited and really looked at the stuff that Empire's had, has had some really nice coverage for Acolyte. Obviously, it's there as a promotional piece, but I don't necessarily read it feeling like it's trying to be rammed down my throat in the same way as maybe they've done some of the stuff in the past. Just generally just excited for Acolyte when it does finally drop, because it feels like it's taking forever to get here.
It's a new era. It's a new feel and a new vibe. And it's the High Republic era, but the back end of it's a more towards our known times of the prequel and sequel and the OT and that era. It's closer to us in that sense, but also it has that, definitely has that prequel feel and look about it. Certainly when we saw the scenes in the trailer on Coruscant. But I'm excited in the sense that Leslie Headland has just basically, she's cast Carrie Ann Moss and her having that Trinity vibe. And as somebody who went and saw The Matrix a couple of days before we saw Phantom Menace, Star Wars, certainly in the Clone Wars, Filoni, for example, would very much point you towards touchstones that are just a shorthand to get across a feel or a vibe. And if her having a Trinity-style vibe about her without bashing you over the head out with it or coming up with some Matrix line that her character says, which would be kind of pull everyone out of the moment. That's not, I don't think that's not what we're going for here. But if you know that she's a capable warrior and she can handle herself, she's a Jedi, so clearly she can. I'm not averse to that at all. But, you know, she talks about Vanessa Rowe being in there, 116 years old now, coming from the comics where she was much, much younger and hot-headed and a different character now, a much older, more mature character. So I think they've laid it all out very well. There's a lot of negativity for no good reason, considering how little we've seen. The images look great. It's the cover article of the latest issue of Empire. Empire obviously fully behind it. So I'm very excited for it. As I say, we're only a matter of weeks away from it now. So it's racing up towards us at light speed.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So gamers, get ready. 30th of August will bring the release of Outlaws on Xbox Series XJS, PlayStation 5 and PC. It's a game that we've been hearing about for months and months and months. We're starting to see images. And apart from the fact that you can already pre-order it on Amazon, we've learned that Kira, Lady Kira no less, will be appearing in the game. Not played by Emilia Clarke, but definitely looking very much like her. Exciting news for people who enjoyed Solo, read the comics, the recent runs of Marvel Comics where Kira returned. This is set between Empire and Jedi, so it's a fertile time period for storytelling. What do you make of this, Mark? It seems like an exciting thing to me. There's been mixed reactions to Outlaws online, but just in the instance of Kira coming back as a character, what do you make of that?
I think that's pretty epic. Kira, I think, the most promising character to come from the Solo film, and we've seen her do some great work in Crimson Rain and also like the Bounty Hunters comic series and stuff as well. Obviously, I suppose it kind of comes down to how much of a role she will play in it. It's quite a pricey game if you want to go for the Ultimate Edition. Another facet to the Star Wars galaxy gives like us gamers a chance to play new characters and to hopefully have some fun doing it. Haven't pre-ordered it yet, but planning too soon.
I'm not much of a gamer, as we've mentioned loads of times on the show, but I do enjoy having a dabble, and I'll probably get it on PC because I can literally do it where I'm sitting right now, where we're recording, just on the laptop. So that'll be easier for me to just dip in and out for 20 minutes, half an hour here and there and have a little play around. It's supposed to be open world. Be very interesting to see how open world it really is and whether or not you will constantly have encounters, or are they going to put a lot of things behind paywalls, how it's going to work. I'm not fully up on how all of that works, but have you heard anything in that regard, what they're going to be doing in that sense?
So there's like three different versions. You've got the standard edition, and then the gold edition and the ultimate edition. The standard edition comes in at £60, and if you pre-order it, you get like a little pre-order cosmetic pack. And it starts to get a little bit more controversial when you go to the gold and the ultimate editions, because the ultimate edition and the gold edition, they come with like a Ubisoft season pass. And you're going to need the season pass if you want to download like two additional downloadable contents. And one of those is the Jabba's Gambit. And so that's the one that I think a lot of people are excited about and also think frustrated about. That something that was quite heavily promoted in, I think, with trailers and stuff, is actually A, a DLC, and B, it's kind of behind a paywall because the price does ramp up. So the base standard edition is £60. And then the ultimate edition, which is everything you can get, which is like the pre-order bonus, 3 days early access if you really, really cannot wait to play it before then, and the DLCs and stuff, plus an art book, that's like £115. So it's quite a big jump. The gold edition is kind of sat in the middle, that's like £95. That basically has the season pass and the early access. So it's the season pass that you are paying extra for. The problem is that I think a lot of people are like, well, I don't need a Ubisoft season pass. And why should I have to pay that much money just to play bits of content for the game? So swings and roundabouts. I mean, it also depends, doesn't it, upon the size of these DLCs. How big are they? Are they going to be side quests and stuff where you're going to rip through in a couple of hours? Or is it going to be something fairly substantial that's going to open up the gameplay and therefore it starts to justify it? I'm kind of like hovering around probably having to plunk down £95 for this. Bearing in mind, I haven't actually finished Jedi Survivor. It's a lot of money just to have the option to play something.
It's tricky with DLCs. I understand the logic of them. And also from a marketing point of view, I suppose if you've got a DLC like they did with Battlefront, every few months, it's something new to talk about, something new to promote. Star Wars as a machine loves that kind of stuff. And also it brings eyes back to the original game. Anybody who maybe hadn't played it, it's a great chance to hop in and catch up. So from that point of view, it's a smart thing to do. I wonder also with Outlaws, what are the tie-ins going to be? Will there be a novel, maybe a comic? Mm. Will there be, action figures?
Yeah, I mean, this is a question, isn't it? Because I was kind of thinking about by now, if you were going to have a tie-in book, like we had with, let's say, Force Unleashed, and even Battlefront.
Yeah, and Galaxies had one as well.
Yeah, it did have a tie-in. Those kind of things are announced because those get released day and date of the same of the game. Now, in fairness, I can remember reading the Force Awakens one, and I was just like, it just felt very superficial. Maybe it's just see how it lands, see what the reception is, and then see when Hasbro drops some figures, how they're received. Because there's always going to be collectors who are going to want to collect it.
A book is great if it takes the central characters, for example, and splits them off into other adventures, or a comic, which takes them as a starting point and does that. Or do you think a straight up adaptation is the right thing to do? I don't game a lot, but I collect games. So I've got quite a gaming collection. A lot of which I don't get to play because I've got the platforms for it or whatever, or the time doing everything else. But I know that they'll do pins and patches and small things that kind of accompany it that aren't perhaps figures or bigger things. Do you think there's the options for that? Because they usually do the gaming guides, the books as well, don't they? So there's definitely options to get things out there.
I suppose in some respects, like a walkthrough doesn't necessarily work in a strategy guide these days because the games are so bloody big. So it almost relies on like the fandom and YouTube channels to kind of do that heavy lifting for you. But I mean, okay, this is dating us, isn't it? You know, go back to 96 with Shadows of the Empire. You had the soundtrack, you had the book, you had the figures, you know, you had the comic, basically everything. So therefore, it's not like it'll be a new thing. You'd think if there's confidence in the game, they would probably do something like that. Maybe it also depends on the game. Maybe they don't want to spoil it, or maybe they just think that actually there's two markets that don't necessarily overlap as much, you know, people who buy books and people who game, which I think if that's the case, that would be a mistake. So I'll be interested to see. So, I mean, I'll pick up a book, obviously, for the collection, download the audiobook if there is one, because that's a good way to kind of consume books these days. But hopefully you'd think there will be a little bit of extra kind of merchandise around this just to support it a little bit. And then for those who aren't really gamers, they can get their own slice of the action, whatever that is.
Hello, I'm Dennis Lawson, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
We have a listener's question, and it's come from Paul Beck in Australia. And the question is, hi guys, just a quick odd question. Do you think there's any chance Luke may possibly have had any offspring at some point between Return of the Jedi and The Last Jedi? I know he was busy building his academy, but could there possibly be another Skywalker out there in the galaxy other than Rey taking up his name? Keep up the brilliant work. Kind regards, Paul from Australia. So do you think there's a potential? Do you think there's the chance that Luke, in between Jedi and The Last Jedi, had a marriage, had a relationship, had what he had basically in Legends, and for whatever reason, that is either popped to one side for future investigation or that family line was wiped out? Do you think there's the chance, at least the chance? And in TV shows, does every element, every facet, every nook and cranny of somebody's life have to be expositionally explained on screen for it to be a thing? Or can he have had a life that he just didn't talk about?
Okay, good question, which is a great way of me padding for time.
Falling for time.
Yeah. Okay. The thing is, yes, I think it's quite likely. And I think it could be one of those things that even if George has explicitly come out, unless he's kind of put something in the actual contract saying Luke cannot get married, he can't have kids or something, he's got to be a bachelor. I think it's something they can slide in. And that's the blessing and the curse of that 35-year gap. I think a lot needs to happen between where we find Luke and the end of Return of the Jedi. And I know, like, we're starting to see small building blocks around him building the Jedi Academy, and obviously the conflict he has with Ben Solo. These are small little bits, but I just kind of feel like there needs to be more, something bigger to push him to where he is at the start of Force Awakens, and really his whole mindset of the Jedi need to finish. You know, being more practical, think about it. They're all celebrating after Return of Jedi. I'm sure the celebration wasn't just a one-night thing. I'm sure it went on for a few days. Fighter fuel makes a great moonshine. Those Ewoks, I can attest to it. You know, they're pretty sexy when you're a little bit drunk. So it's not going to take much.
This is going in a direction I didn't expect, Mark.
It's more of a Star Wars spins direction, I know. But there's definitely scope for it. I suppose the bigger question is, would I want to see it? I guess going back to the expanded universe, I never felt the chemistry of Luke and Mara until they were married. After they became an item, then there was a concerted effort from the authors to kind of make them feel like a cohesive couple. But it just kind of felt like they were hanging on the side of a cliff, and Luke was like, you know, if we get through this, shall we get married? Whereas I'm pretty sure, you know, in the expanded universe era, Mara was Lando left, right, and center, and was more interested in Lando than she was in Luke. I would love Luke to have a wife, and I would love for them to have a kid, and that kid to end up being dead, and that be the impetus, that be the real thing that is actually pushes him over into his hermitage isolationist time that we meet in Force Awakens.
A couple of things occur. One, if they did bring a child of Luke back, Luke and whoever, there would be an element of somehow Palpatine return. It would have that kind of feel, because it does feel like it would have come out of nowhere. If he loses that kid, and that is one of the things that pushes him down a route, not a dark route, but a sorrowful route. It's a little bit like Dial of Destiny with Indy losing Mutt, you know, which kind of does the same to him in a different way. So I think those would be the two things that would bash Lucasfilm over there, because it don't need a lot for people to pile in on Lucasfilm, sadly, at the moment. But by the same token, both of those avenues, I'd like to investigate them. You go up to Shadow of the Sith, for example, which is kind of midway between Jedi and Force Awakens. So you could probably exclude that, because it kind of feels like if something had happened, there'd be some sense of it in there. It's the sort of thing that old friends like Luke and Lando would mention.
Yeah.
Maybe not when the cameras are on, because all you ever read is essentially when the cameras are on, isn't it? You know, these characters are speaking to each other constantly.
Yeah.
It's just that the editor, the writer, has decided that's not quite interesting enough to want to put it in a book. So these characters are talking all the time. It's the same with television or any other medium. And it's a little bit like going back to our earlier conversation about French-speaking Twi'leks. It's a shorthand. You listen to Mark Thompson reading the audiobook of Living Force, which I can't recommend highly enough. It's fantastic. Yeah. And you can't assume that the voice he gives those characters is the exact voice you would give them in a movie or a TV show, because they're all slightly different mediums. And so I think with books, the writer judiciously picks, like an editor and a director picks for TV and film. But getting away from that, I think you could have 12 months. You could have a lost weekend, for goodness sake. Luke could just disappear on a mission and have a whole life, and they could write a novel telling of how he met this amazing girl and they had a kid, anything, whatever, and he had to leave. Or you could come up with something, you could contrive something, and just because he doesn't mention it in conversation with other characters, or we've just not seen it yet, that's George Lucas making the choices of showing you what he showed you in Star Wars. George didn't necessarily want to show Owen and Beru going out shopping for those weird green vegetables. They just appeared in the kitchen. But, you know, let's say that things happen off screen, but they're still happening. It depends on how it's presented and how they do it. Is that something you'd want to read in a book, or is it something you'd want maybe in a comic series? Or ultimately, we've got the Rey film that's 15 years after Rise of Skywalker. So you're waiting to see where Rey is, geographically where Rey is, as a character where Rey is. Is she going to be a totally different kind of person because so much has happened in the last 15 years, which Lucasfilm will love, because there's 15 years of storytelling right there. Absolutely. We can fill in. Let's explain why Rey went from the Rey we knew a year after The Force Awakens in The Rise of Skywalker to this Rey 15 years on, who's, you know, however they do it, however they want to tell that story, where is she and how did she get there? That's prime real estate for Lucasfilm. So this could be something in there, because if the son of Luke Skywalker or the daughter of Luke Skywalker rocks up as, let's assume, Rey starting a new academy, as a member of that academy, I mean, right away, everyone's going to look at each other with their jaws on the floor and go, what the hell? What? Who? What? Mm-hmm. And Luke Lucas, remember, they go, oh, yeah, books, comics, TV series, let's get started. So I can see logic in it.
Cool. Okay, thank you, Paul, for that interesting question. And I think I'm going to go away and ponder that some more because, yeah, there's loads of different avenues we could take this question if we had more time. And unfortunately, we don't. So on that note, if you have a question or a thought or a theory like Paul has, or want to get our take on a thought or a theory, or just a general random Star Wars question, Mark, can you let the good listeners know how we can get in touch?
I can, Mark, and this is how you do it.
Visit fanthatracks.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at Fanthatracks. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch. And check out our Fanthatracks Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fanthatracks.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatracks TV and Fanthatracks Radio are absolutely so no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
And that's me done for this episode.
Excellent. Nice one, dude. Thank you very much for that. And you didn't muck up once.
Hello.
Brilliant. And of course, thank you everybody for listening. Hopefully we will catch you very, very soon on the next episode of Making Tracks. But of course, stay tuned to all the amazing stuff that Fanthatracks is farting out left, right and centre at the moment. If you want to get in contact with me, then you can hit me up on Instagram at markbase_81. And of course, if you want to abuse or throw love at Mr. Newbold, then you can hit him up on Twitter. You can hit him up on prefect_timing. So there you go. Don't be shy. We don't bite that hard. But until next time, stay safe. Have a wonderful Star Wars week, whatever that means to you. And of course, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthatracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.
There is another.